This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
An American imam now claims that right now the fall of Israel is imminent. The fall of Israel is imminent, he said. Well, there have long been Islamists around the world who desire, even call for and predict the destruction of Israel. But now an adjunct professor at the University of California in Irvine has joined that group by insisting that the fall of Israel is now imminent. He claims it's because Muslims now acknowledge that Muhammad was a warrior. He said Israel is doomed. All of this is part of the dissolving of the Zionist state and the ascension of the Palestinian state or the Islamic state, he said. And that's why the attack on October 7th. Is that true? Is Israel doomed? At the same time, it appears that Hamas is feeling a little bit doomed as well. Why? Because they're cracking down on civilians with more intensity. And here all of the pressure is on Israel. But Hamas is cracking down on civilians with horrible intensity. They apparently sense that the rule over Gaza is in jeopardy, and so they're returning to their thuggish roots, a mafia-like organization cracking down on Gazans who speak out against it and massacring people seeking humanitarian aid. At the same time, the Jewish leader in this country, Dennis Prager, says Israel is a pariah among the nations. Even as Senator Majority Leader Chuck Schumer last week described Israel as a pariah among the world's nations. He said Israel can't survive if it becomes a pariah. Those are the words of Chuck Schumer, opposed by the rest of the world. It was for that reason that the majority leader said that Israel should choose a leader other than Benjamin Netanyahu. And then Schumer implied Israel will presumably no longer be a pariah. Well, then what will it be? Well, in Schumer's view, and in the view of most of the Democratic Party in this country, as well as that of the New York Times, the Washington Post, CNN, the Guardian, the BBC, and nearly every university in the West, the world is right, and Israel is wrong. Therefore, Israel is necessarily a pariah among the nations. Dennis Prager went on to say, for 3,000 years, the fate of the Jews has nearly always been to be a pariah among the nations. It was foretold in the Hebrew Bible, which cited Balaam, a pagan prophet, as saying that Israel is a nation that shall dwell alone and not be reckoned among the nations. Right there in Numbers chapter 23, verse 9. When Jews are defenseless, said Prager, they are a pariah. And when Jews defend themselves, according to Mr. Schumer and the elites of the world, they're also a pariah. So if Mr. Schumer had told the truth, he would have said this: Israel's being a pariah among the world's nations tells us much more about the world's nations than about Israel. So Benjamin Netanyahu, in a piece in Israel National News a couple of days ago, asked the world and its leaders, did you lose your moral compass so quickly? How is it they could have been in support of Israel defending herself and then all of a sudden turn on Israel and claim Israel is a pariah? Something's wrong, wouldn't you say? Something's wrong in the viewpoints out there, and apparently God thinks something's wrong as well. But there's also something wrong throughout the world with regard to massive anti-Semitism. For instance, Jews residing in the UK are contemplating leaving the country, equating their experiences to the horrors of Nazi Germany amid the surge in anti-Semitic incidents that are taking place in England. The statistics from the UK indicate 4,100 anti-Semitic incidents in the UK just last year. That's an 82% increase over the previous record of 2,200 such incidents. What's going on? Are the nations raging? Apparently they are. And so we ask the question, why do the nations rage? Well, that's exactly the question that the psalmist asked in Psalm 2. The ancient psalmist asked a provocative question that echoes to this prophetic moment right now, as we're poised on the near edge of eternity, you might say. Why do the heathen or nations rage? Why do they? It's a term or word that is gal or nations or goy, a term or word used to identify any people or nation other than the physical descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It refers generally to all Gentiles, that is the word goy. Therefore, the psalmist's question is maybe better translated, why do the Gentiles or Gentile nations rage? So that's the question before you, before me, before all of us here today on Viewpoint, and our viewpoint will determine destiny in ways that perhaps we never even anticipated. So I welcome you to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Chrismeyer. It's Conversation with Ever-Increasing Conviction, Talk That Transforms. And today is no exception, and we want to find out, what has God said? What is God's viewpoint concerning all of this? If we find in the book of Psalms, Psalm 2, that God has a very explicit viewpoint and asks the question, why do the nations rage, or the Gentile nations rage? There must be a reason, because he has his own viewpoint and conclusion on the matter. So, many would ask the question, well, is God going to keep his promises to Israel? In fact, Greg Laurie, the pastor out there in California, asked that very question just a couple of days ago. He says, yes, God will keep his promise to Israel. He says, we all know what it's like to have someone make a promise and then break it, but when God makes a promise, you can take it to the bank. Well, that's true. But to whom are the promises made? One of the things, one of the problems that we as Christians have or make, even including our pastors, theologians, and so on, is that we do not seem to understand that the promises of God are made not specifically to individuals. Most of them are made to a people. Even when God made a promise to Abraham that through him all the nations of the earth would be blessed, he was actually making a promise to the people descending from Abraham who would walk in the faith of Abraham. How do we know that? Well, in Jesus' day, you may recall that I believe it was even during the period of time after his grand entry into Jerusalem on Palm Sunday that he encountered the religious leaders, and they were criticizing him as not following in the ways of Abraham. So Jesus responded to them and said, look, you claim to have entitlement to the promises through Abraham. But if you were the sons and children of Abraham, you would do the works of Abraham. But you don't. Therefore, he said, this is what Jesus said, you are of your father, the devil. Yet they were the physical descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. From Jesus' perspective, they were not heirs according to the promise because they did not live according to the ways of the promise. That might be true for Christians as well. What do you think? We'll be right back. Stay tuned. Why do the nations rage?
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination.
So what happened in just one generation?
Hi, I'm Chuck Chrismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Did you know that God instructed the Gentiles to prepare war? He did. We'll talk about that later on in the program as it relates to the raging of the nations. You know, rage is a very strange thing. It can go way off the rails, can't it? When people indulge in a rage, you never know what's going to happen. The most bizarre things can take place. People would take the most amazing risks to destroy that which they're raging against. Just look at what happens with regard to some of the road rage incidents and so on. When people go into a rage, they lose all connection with reality. So when the nations are raging, they also are losing all connection with reality from God's viewpoint. You see, our viewpoint determines destiny. And if our viewpoint is not in a line with God's viewpoint on these issues, then there's something wrong with our viewpoint, and we need to reassess our viewpoint. The problem is that we think our viewpoints are just as important as God's viewpoint, maybe more important. I mean, the Pope says his viewpoint is more important. In fact, that is a fundamental theological basis in Roman Catholicism, that the Pope and his viewpoint can superimpose itself upon the Scripture itself. It's true. That's the viewpoint. So if you and I think that we can diss what God has said or disagree for whatever reasons or rationale we have, we then can actually become part of the raging of the Gentile nations against Israel. Do you want to be in that category? I don't know about you, but I don't want to be in that category because of what God says is going to be the consequence to those who are in that category. So here's the deal. The nations, the Gentile nations, are determining destiny. They really are. And they don't realize what they're doing, but they are. And even now, you can hear the drum roll announcing the opening of the final curtain of the divine drama on human history, I think. It's revealing the spectacular conflict that's soon to take center stage. The nations are raging. They're raging along geopolitical lines and historical alliances. In fact, many of them deemed destined to endure the ravages of time has shifted dramatically in just a single decade or two decades. Arch enemies have baffled the world, becoming end time friends like Turkey and Russia, Iran and Russia. Friends have become implacable foes. Betrayal has bereaved the world of ancient trust, leaving leaders bewildered, I think, at the shocking events that are unfolding right before their terrified eyes. So the nations are being stirred in what seems to be unprecedented rage. However, for the students of the Bible, you and me and so on, this should not come as a surprise, because God said it was going to be that way. Certainly in Psalm 2, we were told that in asking the rhetorical question, why do the heathen or the Gentile nations rage and the people imagine a vain and foolish thing? But that rage is intensifying, even though it's vain and foolish from God's viewpoint. In fact, so great is the intensifying of the rage against any and all things Jewish or related to Israel that we've seen global boycotts being declared against anything related to Israel. We've seen choreographed hatred among our youth. Vicious, viral anti-Semitism sweeping the Western nations. Institutions of higher learning are driving the anti-Semitism, the rage. Political correctness isn't helping matter. And the so-called NGOs or non-governmental organizations are further institutionalizing the tsunamic rage that's sweeping the earth. It's just happening right in front of us. But what's really concerning is that many churches and their pastors have followed suit. The so-called replacement theology has enabled a rapidly growing number of armchair theologians to hitch their star to a politically correct wave of cultural and global hatred toward Israel. They think they have the right to exalt themselves over what God has said and declare that God is through with Israel and the only people that are left that he has any interest in are professing Christians. Is that true? then why is it that God said very explicitly through the prophets that unless the moon would cease to shine, the sun would cease to glow, and the stars would fall from heaven, unless all those things were to happen, then his promises to Israel would stand. So apparently God is still intent on keeping those promises because he's not a man, but he's a God of his own word. Unlike many of us, he keeps his word. The problem with our understanding of that, though, is he keeps his word to those primarily who keep his word. In other words, he makes a promise to the physical descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, but only to those who obey his voice and do his will. So it's going to be fulfilled. His promise and covenant is going to be fulfilled to the physical descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, a remnant of those who will do his will. The same is true of Christians, isn't it? Isn't that what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 7? He says, not everybody who says unto me, Lord, Lord, is going to inherit the kingdom. Not everybody who claims to be a Christian is going to inherit the kingdom. Only those who do the will of my Father, like I did, Jesus said, then they have to as well. They must do the will of my Father, and if they don't get in. So you see, even the promises in the New Testament that we pick up largely from the Old Testament are only to a remnant of righteous people, not who make professions of faith, but who live by faith. Because the just shall live by faith, not by confessions of faith. You get the point? So there's something here that is of great significance for application, not only to Israel, but to Gentile believers. So the rage of the nations now is really, you could say, rationally irrational. Why? Well, it's born of a fundamental flaw that's been the driving force through history and now is culminating in this uncontrollable rage. And I believe it has to do with envy. In my new book, When Persecution Comes, there's an entire chapter that deals with envy as the driving force for all persecution. Underlying the spiritual underlying force for all persecution and anti-Semitism is envy. You might want to get the book when it comes out in hopefully August for that chapter alone, because it will reveal so much about our lives, about what's happened in history, what's happened to the Jewish people, what's happened to Israel, what's happened to Jesus, what happened to his apostles, and what's going to happen to those who follow in the name of Jesus, driven by envy. So when we ask the question or answer the question, why do the nations rage? Well, at the root, it's because of this historical envy. Unrestrained envy, coupled with rebellion against the God of Israel, gives, I guess you could say, a kind of perverse rationality to their rage. In other words, they could justify it. So the nations are venting their historical hatred and envy against the people once delivered from the bondage of Egypt, and now are joining with the words of Pharaoh of old, who is the Lord that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? That's where we are. But God says to Israel, I will be unto her, Jerusalem, a wall of fire round about, and will be the glory in the midst of her. For thus saith the Lord of hosts, after the glory hath he sent me unto the nations which spoiled you, for he that touches you touches the apple of his eye. You can find that in Zechariah chapter 2, by the way. So the kings and rulers of the earth have set themselves confederating, conspiring against the Lord and his anointed Israel. But their rage is not righteous. Now, how is God going to respond to all that? Well, he tells us how he's going to respond. He that sits in the heaven shall laugh at their disingenuousness in their dogged efforts to destroy Israel while pretending to do righteousness. Then Psalm 2 tells us that God will speak to them, that is the nations and their rulers, in his wrath and vex them in his sore displeasure. Now, I don't know what you think, but if God starts to vex you, you're in trouble. So the Lord of nations and the God of Israel isn't happy. He's sore displeased. Now, he's sore displeased with two-thirds of Israel that aren't even trying to follow him. They're secular. He's sore displeased with them. He's sore displeased with the rest of Israel that's rejected Yeshua as their Messiah. Yet, God says in Psalm 2, in spite of all that, I've set my king upon my holy hill of Zion. So, from God's perspective, see, it's very hard for us to understand and accept God's viewpoint. But it's God's viewpoint that determines destiny. It's not man's viewpoint. Man's viewpoint will determine their destiny as well, but in a very negative way. If it's against God, if your viewpoint is dissing God's viewpoint, you're in deep trouble. So is Israel. So are the Gentile nations. So God, through the prophet Joel, said this: Behold, in those days and in that time, when I shall bring again the captivity of Judah and Jerusalem, that is, return the Jews to their promised land, which is happening right now, I will also gather all nations and will bring them down to the valley of Jehoshaphat, that's the valley of Megiddo, and I will plead with them there for my people and for my heritage, whom they have scattered among the nations and parted my land. Now, that's not going to be pretty. Wait till you hear what God says about that when we get back from this upcoming break. Now, before we get to that break, I want to make available to you, again, my book, King of the Mountain, The Eternal Epic End Time Battle. For it said that he who rules the Temple Mount rules the world. If you want to find out the dynamics of what was really taking place, why these things are taking place, and where they're headed, you might want to get a copy of the book, King of the Mountain. There's a reason why a Jewish talk show host interviewed me for 7 weeks on this book alone. That's unheard of. With every day that passed, every week that passed, he said, we just can't hardly even scratch this. Will you come back next week? And that's how it went. What was it that grabbed that Jewish talk show host's attention? It'll grab yours as well if you get a copy of the book, King of the Mountain. Remember, God says, I've set my king on my holy hill. But what's going to happen to the Gentile nations? They want to set their king on the holy hill. That's the problem. And it ain't going to be a pretty picture. When the King of Glory, the only begotten Son of God, full of grace and truth, is ready to descend and rule this planet, and the kings of the earth are opposing him, including one called the Antichrist, you know there's going to be fire ahead. Get a copy of the book. It's a $20 book, yours for $15, on the website, saveus.org. King of the Mountain. You can call us, 1-800-SAVE-USA, 1-800-SAVE-USA, or write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23251, at $5 for postage. And we'll be right back, friends.
There is so much more about Chuck Crismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, saveus.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, saveus.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at saveus.org.
Is Israel's destruction imminent, as said the imam there in Southern California? Not hardly. Unless God is not God, and unless God does not keep his word, they can rage all they want. They can name the name of Muhammad all they want. They can raise jihad all they want. And it'll stir up a lot of trouble. That's what rage does. But it's not going to bring the imminent destruction of Israel. That doesn't mean that Israel isn't in deep trouble. Israel is in deep trouble. Israel has been in deep trouble. Oh, yes, Israel's been in deep trouble for 2,500 years. Since they began to rebel openly, notoriously, God used the Assyrians to take dominion over the 10 northern tribes of Israel and disperse them throughout the face of the earth. We call them the 10 lost tribes today. And then 135 years or so later, he had to deal with Judah and Benjamin in the south. And they were following the ways of their promiscuous brothers in the north. And God dealt with them, and ultimately the Romans came in 70 AD and dispersed them throughout the face of the earth. Just as God had said was going to happen in Deuteronomy chapter 28. So now, 2 days later, you know, 2,000 years, 2 days, a day with the Lord is 1,000 years a day. 2 days later, he's drawing the Jewish people back from all over the world, starting in 1947, 48, and then continuing on. And now, with the attack on by Hamas on October 7th, it actually is accelerating the return of the Jewish people to Israel. It may sound strange to you, but that's what's happening. And the prophet Isaiah said, let's go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. Gentile followers of the Lord would become grafted into Israel. Many nations shall come, prophesied Micah. Come and let us go to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. For the law shall go forth of Zion, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. In the last days, said the prophet Micah. That doesn't sound much like Israel's imminent destruction, does it? On the other hand, Israel is in deep trouble. Israel's in deep trouble not because only because the nations are raging against her, but because she has rejected the God who made and preserved her a nation and made her called her the apple of his eye. And God says, I am going to judge her double for all her sins. But he's not going to totally destroy Israel. Therefore, the idea that Israel's destruction is imminent is just absolutely, completely wrong on its face. In fact, this rage that's going on among the nations, it's not just by Islamic nations, friends. It's by all the nations, including the United States of America under the leadership first of Barack Obama and then under the leadership of Joseph Biden.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. They are doing everything they can while pretending to be in support of Israel, actually, disingenuously, are doing just the opposite. They're turning the nations against Israel. They're joining with the rest of the nations. So America now is becoming complicit openly before God, becoming complicit in the alienating of Israel, the joining in the rage against Israel. That's exactly what Chuck Schumer did. As a Jew, he joined in the rage against Israel for political gain of his party. That's why he did it. He wasn't interested in Israel. He was interested in power politics for the Democratic Party, or Democrat Party. He tried to show his bona fides. Well, I'm a Jew, you know. I obviously am a very great supporter of Israel. No, he's a great supporter of the Israel he wants it to be. In other words, a supporter of Democrat politics and of liberal ideas. But he hates Benjamin Netanyahu because Benjamin Netanyahu is leading the nation in another direction. And he doesn't like the democracy, you see, of Israel. He wants democracy, but only the democracy that produces the result that he wants. It's pretty amazing what's happening when you think about it. I mean, even Vladimir Putin came out this week and said, America is not a democracy. You hate democracy. You don't want real democracy. You just want what you want. And you're going to do everything you can to frustrate and prevent real democracy, just as you're doing now to try to prevent a legitimate candidate for president from running. You're doing everything you can to prevent him. You don't want true democracy. In fact, you hate it. What you want is a democratic dictatorship. That's coming from Vladimir Putin. Now, whether you agree with him or not, there's something there. You can say, well, yeah, look at Vladimir Putin. He gets rid of his political opposition. Yeah, that's true. So it's like the kettle calling the pot black. Both of them are wrong. Now, we digress. So the kings of the earth have set themselves confederating against the Lord and against his anointed. And they've caused the land to be divided. So, the prophet Joel says in Joel chapter 3, verse 9, proclaim this among the Gentiles, says the Lord. Prepare war. Now, if you were to go to Washington, D.C., you would find engraved on at least one, if not several, of the buildings there, beat your swords into plowshares and your spears into pruning hooks. It's a direct quote from Joel. But what they don't quote is what came before that, where God said to the Gentile nations, assemble yourselves and come, all you Gentile nations, beat your plowshares into swords and your pruning hooks into spears. He says, let the nations be wakened and come to the Valley of Jehoshaphat. That's the Valley of Megiddo, my friends. You know, Har-Megiddo, Megiddon. For there I will judge all the heathen nations round about. Who does that include? It includes all the nations that have come against Israel one way or another. that have tried to divide the land, including the United States of America, including England, including Russia, including Iran, including all the nations, whether they be Islamic or professing Christian, all the nations that have been participant in trying to get Israel to divide up the land that God decreed to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob as an eternal leasehold. That means the nations have disrespected God. And when the nations disrespect God, he disses them. And he's going to do that. He says, prepare war. Now, who's going to be involved in that war? God is. God is going to set things up in such a way that the nations of the earth are going to bear terrifying consequences at the hand of God himself. So he says, let the heathen or the Gentile nations be wakened and come to the valley of Jehoshaphat, for there I'm going to judge all these heathen nations round about. Put in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe, for their wickedness is great. Multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision, for the day of the Lord is near in the valley of decision. You know what? That's exactly right. The day of the Lord is near, and we're in the valley of decision. What will we do? What will the nations do? What will America do? What will America's leaders do? What will America's pastors do? What will you do? We're all in the valley of decision. For the day of the Lord is near in the valley of decision. So, would you be interested in knowing what the Lord is going to do in response? We're going to talk about that when we get back from this upcoming break. Now, I want to, again, make available to you the book King of the Mountain, because it's going to open up to you understanding not just of what's happening now, but how it has been developing for the past 6,000 years, leading to this moment, this ultimate prophetic moment of human history. And you will begin to see then exactly how things are developing and why. See, it's not just enough to know that things are developing. We need to understand why they're developing, because then we have real understanding. With all of the information, we need to have wisdom and understanding. Right? So the book, King of the Mountain, The Eternal Epic End Time Battle. $15, we'll put it in your hands. It's on our website, saveus.org. You can call us at 1-800-SAVE-USA or write to us at Save America Ministries. P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Again, writing a check at $5 for postage. We'll be right back. What happens when they prepare war?
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, I'll build my church. Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, behold how they love one another. Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
You know, I can't tell you what a privilege it is to come before you every single day now rapidly approaching 29 years on the air, 5 days a week live. I remember the original station manager where we began, where I had absolutely no experience with radio whatsoever, but believed that God had called me to do this. He said, yeah, you know, I think you may be right. I want to give you that opportunity. He told me later, he said, Chuck, I didn't think you'd last 2 years. Well, here we are, almost 29 years later. You see, there's a reason why we do this. Yours truly gets no payment, no remuneration whatsoever. I don't ask for it, and I don't seek it. The donations that you make are enabling us to stay on the air. There are many expenses. It's very expensive to be on various stations. It's very expensive for us to just be available to you via podcasts. All of these things cost money. And that's where your donations go. There isn't one person who receives any salary or remuneration directly for their services to Save America Ministries. Not me, not my right-hand person in the office, nobody. Now, you can wonder, well, how in the world do you carry on? That's another whole issue, but I can tell you with great assurance that not one dime of your resources, your gifts, go to any human being working in Save America Ministries. Not one. God has made other avenues available. And even at that, yours truly still receives no remuneration. I'm just delighted to be able to do what we do here and trusting God at every single stage. And it's wonderful. For those of you who have joined with us and they were seeing the last 2 days, we received three more who wanted to commit to the Persecution Project. We're just thrilled. For those of you who have joined with us in that regard, for those of you who don't know what that is, I have my 11th book coming out called When Persecution Comes, Preparing Our Hearts for Perilous Times. And it's a book, I think, like none other that you have ever experienced. It's a book for our time to prepare God's people for unprecedented assaults upon our faith, upon us individually, on our families, and so on, and God's people are not prepared. This book will help to prepare. Can be a tool in the hands of pastors and parachurch leaders, can be used in your small group ministries, and when you make your contribution of a minimum of $250 designated specifically to the Persecution Project, you will receive 10 books that you may distribute to those that God puts on your heart to give to. This is not an evangelistic book. This is a book to be given and directed to professing believers. Okay, so you do that. You give us a call, 1-800-SAVE-USA, or you write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check, put on the check, Persecution Project, or a note, something to that effect. Or you can go to the website, saveus.org, where we have a very specific place there for you to make that commitment. And then along about, hopefully in August, we will be getting those books out to you so that you can begin to be a true and legitimate ministry partner by distributing that message for such a time as this. Okay, so we're talking about the nations raging. We're talking about, we know that Islam is raging, but what we don't quite get is that the Gentile nations as a whole, the Western world is raging. The whole world is raging against Israel and against God's anointed. And just as they rage against Israel, so they will rage against Christians, true followers of Jesus Christ. That's why this book must be written. We just haven't quite gotten to the place where we can accept that such a thing could happen in the United States of America. But, friends, it is already happening. It is already happening. And before too long, we're going to develop a special site on our website to help carry on that message. I believe we'll probably call it the Persecution Chronicles, so that you'll be able to keep abreast periodically of at least samplings of what is taking place in our world, but even more particularly in our country and the Western world. Now, about the Gentiles, God tells the Gentile world to prepare war. Right there in Joel chapter 3, verses 10 to 12. He said, you guys wake up, you Gentile nations, wake up. Come to the Valley of Jehoshaphat. I'm going to draw you there. And I'm going to judge you there, for the day of the Lord is near in the Valley of Decision. So that valley is the valley ultimately of decision. But before that time, we all must make a decision. It's not just the nations and their leaders that have to make a decision. It's you and I that have to make a decision. Because each one of us will be judged according to our own attitudes toward Israel, toward the physical descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Each one of us will be judged according to our own obedience or lack thereof to God's call in our lives, just as he judges Israel, and they're going to be judged double for all their sins. What would you do in the United States of America, a nation such as this? What would you do? In other words, the day of the Lord is near in the valley of decision. So here's what God, what the Bible says God is going to do. The Lord shall roar out of Zion and utter his voice from Jerusalem, and the heavens and the earth shall shake, but the Lord will be the hope of his people and the strength of the children of Israel. And so shall you know that I am the Lord your God, dwelling in Zion, my holy mountain. My holy mountain. Well, isn't that interesting? Because in Psalm 2, where we began our discussion, why do the nations rage? God says, look, I'm God. I'm going to paraphrase what he says there toward the end of Psalm 2. Don't you guys get it? You nations, you leaders, you think you're so great. But I'm God. I'm going to have you in derision. What you don't realize, he says, is that I've already set my king upon my holy hill. In other words, when I have decreed that my king, Yeshua HaMashiach, the Lord of glory, the king of the universe, what you don't seem to get is I've already decreed he's going to sit on my holy hill of Zion. So God says this. Look, you guys, speaking to the leaders of the world, you guys might want to just humble yourselves and kiss the Son. In other words, make up to Christ and get on his agenda, unless you be destroyed in the process. Now, if you read Psalm 2, you're going to find out that's exactly what he says. Don't play games with God. Don't play games with God over Israel. And don't play games with God over his word to Gentile believers who think somehow that we can rationalize our way out from what God has said and do our own thing, which makes us essentially equal to God, just like Satan, his archenemy. So, let's talk for a minute about that holy mountain. I think you can see God means business. He's passionate about this holy mountain, that is the Temple Mount. And he says, all of these designs and confederations of men, their leaders, and so on, are not going to prevail against my plan and purposes. So, thus saith the Lord of hosts, I was jealous for Zion with great jealousy, and I was jealous for her with great fury. But then he says, thus saith the Lord, I am returned unto Zion and will dwell in the midst of Jerusalem, and Jerusalem shall be called a city of truth, and the mountain of the Lord of hosts, the holy mountain. Now, if you want to know where that is, it's in Zechariah chapter 8. So in the latter days, we're in the latter days right now. We're not in the period of the day of the Lord yet, but we're in the latter days just preceding the day of the Lord. The day of the Lord might just be tomorrow, might be just around the corner. That's the final time frame of the end times. In the latter days, thus saith the Lord of hosts, behold, I will save my people. That's talking about the physical descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I will save my people from the east country and from the west country, and I will bring them, and they shall dwell in the midst of Jerusalem. And they, the seed of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, shall be my people, and I will be their God in truth and righteousness. Does that sound like God did away with Israel? As many pastors are saying these days? Does that sound like Israel is, its demise is imminent? I don't think so. So the reality is, the last days have become our days. And the words of the ancient prophets now are being fulfilled, I think you could say, breathtakingly right before our eyes. So history's moment of truth is right on our doorstep right now. And all of prophecy is soon going to be history. So then we have to ask ourselves. You see, this is what makes this program different in many respects. It's not just about information. The issue is, what then shall I do? What is my place? What is my role? What is required of me? Not just what is going to require of them, what's going to be required of me. So, how will the eternal battle for the king of the holy mountain end? Well, God says, I've set my king upon my holy hill. So it's going to come to pass in the last days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established on the top of the mountains, shall be exalted above the hills. Many people are going to go and say, come up, let us go to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. And the word of the Lord is going to go from Jerusalem, Mount Zion. And he shall judge among the nations and shall rebuke many people. And then and only then shall they beat their swords into plowshares. And the loftiness of man shall be bowed down, and the haughtiness of men shall be made low, and the Lord alone shall be exalted in that day. Well, that day is upon us, my friends. So the question is, seeing then that all these things are going to take place and are taking place, how should you and I then live? What is our faithfulness quotient to the Lord as professing Christians? What is our obedience quotient? Are we really living very much like much of Israel has historically, claiming the blessings of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, but not walking in faithfulness? Do we think that just by going to church somehow that we're pleasing the Lord? Or is there something more that God wants from us? I think there's something more. He wants us to live and walk in righteousness without which no man, holiness without which no man shall see the Lord. Get a copy of the book, King of the Mountain. I think it'll encourage your heart. The Eternal Epic End Time Battle, $15 on our website, saveus.org. And pray for Israel.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.